From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, May 22nd, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gunav Chish, Hawa, Toeksuk Newsom, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, our past, our present, our voices, a multi-generational indigenous art show happening on June 5th, produced by Black and White Raven Company. The Juno Audubon Society Birdwalk field trips continue weekly through June 15th. We'll have a preview. Updates from both the Juno Police Department and the Juno Chamber of Commerce. And we'll find out about an electric fence incentive program from the Defenders of Wildlife that could help you secure your bear attractants. Those conversations and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hanson Gress, Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tau kanakaya haani kak gunish cheese.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
To walk in nobody else's shoes, wasn't put here to live a life that I didn't choose. I refuse to shrink to fit all your expectations, and I refuse to accept all your limitations. And I may not be for everybody, but you can be sure that I know my worth. I've been told that I'm a creature of disbelief. Stole a few hearts, but does that make me a lifelong thief? I walk tall cause
little witty young man with creature of disbelief. You are listening to community supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. On June 5th, from 10 a.m. until 8 p.m. at the Alaska Robotics Gallery, Black and White Raven Company is sponsoring Our Past, Our Present, Our Voices, a multi-generational indigenous art show. It's happening through the producing power of the one and only Chloe Cavanaugh, owner and entrepreneur. And Chloe joins me now in studio. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. How's it going, Chloe?
Gunashish for having me. I'm just beyond excited to be here. It's always a great time to be able to pop on with you.
Absolutely. It's so fun. So let's first talk about this event. Like, how did this event come about? This indigenous multi-generational art show. Where was the seed of this idea?
So I think it mostly came about, Pat and I have talked about collaborating in this space for a while. And then I think throughout the year, you just start to meet so many amazing indigenous artists that you start to say, okay, how are we all not in one room, and how can we work together? And it seemed like there was no better time, like celebration and a space for us all to come together when all our families are coming together in a space, when all of our community is coming together in a space to celebrate culture and community and hear and learn and experience one another and our songs and our stories and our regalia. And it felt like, okay, this is the time to put together a multi-generational art show and highlight what it means to be an Indigenous artist. And I hear so many questions throughout the year of, can I wear Indigenous art? What does it mean to be an Indigenous artist? Is it just doing traditional artwork? And it felt like the space to answer some of those questions of it. It's Indigenous artists that make Indigenous art. It isn't Indigenous art that makes it Indigenous art. There's so many multifacets to who these artists are, and it's an expression of who they are. And was really excited to just put together this space to see a varying amount of ages and experiences and art forms to kind of answer some of these questions and also connect with one another.
Yeah, it's and you're talking about Pat Race from Alaska Robotics, where the space will be, where the artwork will be. And it's interesting, we were talking about this during the Ok Rock. And that the idea came up of like, what is indigenous music? Mm-hmm. And basically, indigenous music is made by indigenous people, whatever the form or the genre is. Yeah. And that's what I love about your description of the event, which is it can be anything. It's artwork. Right. Made by indigenous folks. And so that makes it indigenous art. Yeah. And so being able to sort of highlight that, I was going to ask you that question of like, obviously the timing couldn't be better with celebration just around the corner here. So the show is on the 5th of June. Is it going to go longer than that? Is it going to stay up at the gallery as well?
Yeah. So it will be up for the entire month of June. And then the cool part about that too, is that we will be in a lot of ways sharing that space with Ok Rock as they'll have performers coming through Alaska Robotics and Amalga and some taking over that space. So it feels like in a way that building is going to be filled with so much indigenous art and space and voices. So I'm really excited.
That's going to be awesome. Now, I know on your Facebook event page, which you can search Facebook for Black and White Raven Company, and they'll have their Facebook page. And on there, you've been posting some of the artist profiles that have that are going to be involved. Can you tell us a little bit about who some of the artists are going to be?
Yeah, so we have really artists from all over who have backgrounds from Heidelberg to Sitka to Anchorage and varying ages. We have a 19-year-old engraver who does form line and has been learning from his grandfather, Alex Edwards, and 19 years old and already just doing amazing, amazing work. And we have an 11-year-old that's participating, and we have an elder who's participating. And there's so many different variations of what that art looks like. Like I was referencing Alex Edwards with engraving, but we have Cade who runs Loathed in the USA and does leather working and is amazing. And we have prints from Courtney out of Anchorage, and Ashley Young is going to be selling her merch there. So really highlighting these various art forms of like, it's the music, it's the merch, and it's the engraving, and it's all these different ways that it looks like to be an artist.
And it's really fun that you're having artists not just from Juneau, but because obviously people come from all around for celebration. So having artists from all over, even up as far north as Anchorage, is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty great. And so I want to ask you a little bit about Black and White Raven Company, because I know you started this about, was it four years ago or
so? Four years now.
Yeah, 4 years. And it's just grown immensely. And you've done so much, right? Yeah. You're like producing so much stuff. You're getting involved in all these events. And I'm just kind of curious about like, what started the company? How did you start?
Yeah, so I really started after my grandfather had passed in 2018, and I was just digitizing his carving templates. And through that, started doing my own artwork, but also digitizing work that he either hadn't been able to complete or completed a story in his life. Like I digitized this carving template and someone would be like, that was for a drum he did for us. And these stories came out of it. And then I found that we were able to give back through that of providing cake with free open gyms, and it's shifted and changed to be able to give back to different projects and also uplift other artists. And I think when I look at what the business has grown into in the last 4 years, and I think of, my gosh, I started just like doing stickers, and then now it's graphic design and it's apparel and it's all these things and going into communities and teaching kids how to do their own graphic art. I think when I sum up the work of Black and White Raven Company, it really feels like all the things that I felt like I had lost when my grandfather passed and my uncle Aaron passed are the things that we're able to create now, is these spaces. And these spaces for community, and the things that I miss about them are the things that come through with my business.
Wow. That's really great. And if you could, you can follow blackandwhiteravencompany.com. There's also a Facebook and or an Instagram. If you search it, you can follow. There's a lot of pictures on Instagram that you post, and different things and different events that you're having, or pop-ups and things like that, which are really cool. So what continues now to sort of, I guess the word, fuel, like what fuels this drive in you, this work to, cause you're so busy. Do a lot. And so I'm just like, where does that fuel? Where does that fire come from?
I always stand by that. The fuel is obviously the coffee and endless amount. I think it really is. I'm really grateful for the things that I've been given in this lifetime. And I think about, the immense amount of uplifting my family has given me, and what the person I am today is a huge credit to my uncle and my grandfather in uplifting me, and seeing how much impact that had on me as a youth and who I've become today is the space that I want other people to experience. And I think too, fueled by that, we talk about Indigenous community in this way that's almost a past tense sometimes, or only a tradition. And then I look at the work that other people are doing in our community to show it's an active, living, breathing community and culture. If you look at Hune with language, and you look at Colleen and Lyle James with dancing and teaching, and all of these amazing community members, and those are just examples. But the importance of having space, and the importance of what that space creates and what that gives, and really inspired by so many people in the community. And it just, it pushes me to be grateful, and it pushes me to put in the work to work with so many amazing people.
Wow. That's great. And what can folks do? I mean, besides maybe, purchase the art that will be happening and buy the merch that Ashley's selling and things like that. But what can folks do to help sort of uplift Indigenous voices?
Gosh, I think there's multiple ways of paying people that are doing the work, paying people for their time and their knowledge, getting involved. UAS does free language classes. Reach out to Hune and reach out to other people that are doing language work, and actively learn and participate. Show up to their classes and inspire them. And when they come speak language at your events, pay them to do it and make these spaces. Carve out a budget for the work that we do, for the art we do, the language we speak. Just making intentional space for that, I think, is really, really important. Not just a back burner, but finding ways to incorporate and be intentional about the ways things are incorporated into our community.
I think that's a great word, intention, intentionality in doing that and making that part of it, which is so good. So remind us again, the opening is on June 5th. It's going from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. that day. So is there sort of, is it open all day, mostly because celebration is happening at that time? Because that's the first Friday, right? So there'll be all kinds of first Friday events that evening, but you're also starting earlier in the day, which is kind of cool. So do you have events planned during that day?
So mostly we'll just have different artists moving through the space, and we'll also have different music going on in the space. And really we're keeping it up all month, and we're starting really early because there's so much to do in celebration. There's Ock Rock going on. There's celebration going on. Native movements popping down on June 9th from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. They'll be doing a decolonizing gender workshop. So there's so many things going on that we wanted to offer up a lot of space to not take away from the other things going on, but give people the chance to experience it all.
I love that. It's the Our Past, Our Present, Our Voices, a multi-generational Indigenous art show produced by Chloe Cavanaugh. It's opening on June 5th, and it will run the whole month, but you want to get there on June 5th for all the events that will be happening that day. It's at Alaska Robotics at 134 North Franklin Street. Chloe, Gunath Cheesh, for coming in and telling us all about it. Thank you so much.
Gunath Cheesh, thanks for having me.
All right. Up next, the weather is good, so it's good time to get outside with the Juneau Audubon Society. We'll talk birds next here on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Every Saturday from now until June 15th, you can get outside and look at some birds and learn a little something from the Juno Audubon Society on their field trips. And you can find the full list at junoaudubon.org/events. And Brenda Wright joins me now to give us a preview. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasiati, how's it going, Brenda?
It's going good. There's lots of birds to see.
There's so many birds to see. So let's talk about some of these events. You've got one there. So they're every Saturday.
Yep.
So,
yeah. And I think almost all of them, except maybe one, it was at 8 o'clock. Nope. They're all at 8 a.m.
8 a.m. Okay.
Yep. And just because we have a globally important bird area here, we have a few walks that are there, which is in the Mendenhall wetlands of the State Game Refuge.
Right. There's a few. There's so many things to see there, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And so this Saturday, May 25th, from 8 o'clock to 10 a.m., you'll be out at the wetlands.
Yes. Okay. On the airport dike trail for this one. And then because certain birds have different length legs, we'll go out Industrial Boulevard, that side, for the refuge there and see if we can find some of them. And the grassland birds are on both sides. So hopefully we'll get to see both see those on both days.
Okay. And that's on that one where you go to the west side is going to be on June 1st.
Right.
Okay. All right. Great.
Yep. And then we have some really excellent fun birds that dredge lakes that we hardly ever get to see, but they come and spend their summer with us, and they should be all arrived by the bird walk on June 8th. And so we'll be walking around dredge lakes to see some of those really fun birds. The leaves are full size by that time, so it's a little harder to see the warblers, but luckily they're still singing.
Ah, so even if you can't see them, you might be able to hear them.
Yes, and the people leading this trip are excellent for that. But I have to mention, too, that there's a really fun new app that's free called Merlin Bird ID, and it has a sound ID.
What does that do?
Well, all you have to do is put it on your phone, turn your phone on, hit the sound ID, and it listens for birds.
Oh, it's like those old apps that used to tell you what song was playing.
Yes.
Now we have one for the
birds. Birds, yes. And they just upgraded it, so it's really marvelous.
Oh, that's so interesting.
If you get to be an elderly person like me, sometimes you can't hear those really high-pitched songs, but your phone can.
Oh, that
is
amazing.
You know, you can there's five birds and you hear two. Where are they?
Interesting. Yeah. Like it can identify.
And they changed the app just enough so that you get to see pictures of the bird too and other songs that they can sing.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Wow. That's amazing. Okay. And then let's just look at the last one real quick. We have on June 15th, which will be the last one for the summer, right?
Right. The last official bird
official
hike. Yeah.
Okay.
But and this one is around Sunny Point. That's one of the places that's abuts the refuge, where every landowner has donated their property back to the refuge after the increase of size after the mean high tide is where your property line is. And so as we lift here in Juneau, the people's property can get bigger. But if they want to, they can donate it back to the refuge.
I see. Okay.
And it's an excellent place for my tree swallow project. I have 24 boxes there, and there'll be by June 15th, there'll be quite a bit of activity there while the adults are coming and going and feeding the young birds in the nest.
Oh, so what is that project? What are you working on there?
Yeah, this is our eighth year. We have 66 boxes around town this year, all of them either in the refuge or in the Seal Trust lands. And what we're trying to find out is that how well are our insect-eating birds doing on the West Coast, because on the East Coast, there's a terrible, terrible die-out of almost all insect-eating birds. And so the project started because we were hoping that we would find out we have so many tree swallows, we could donate some back to the east side of the country when we find out what's the biggest problem in their life, where they're not being able to survive there, like we did for the eagles.
Yeah.
Remember that story when they'd almost completely died out in the lower 48? We donated eaglets from Alaska for 20 years.
Wow.
And now they're no longer listed down there. They're perfectly okay.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So do we know what the issue is on the East Coast with the insect-eating birds?
There's a couple different new types of pesticide that are totally effective. And unfortunately, they treat the seeds, with this neonicotinoid, and one seed can kill some of these small birds.
Oh.
That it doesn't need, they're supposed to keep insects from eating the seeds or affecting the plant later, but it's also affecting the bird because it can't get any food, and it actually is a poison for them too.
Oh, so the birds are eating the seed?
Yeah,
or they're eating
they can be affected by the fact that the plant is killing all the bugs that they would normally eat.
I see. Okay. So just the cycle, the eco cycle is sort of getting disrupted because of the pesticide.
Right. And we're using the tree swallows as our example because although we have other kinds of swallows here in town, the violet green, the bank swallow, the barn swallow, and they love playing around downtown, all these swallows, but our tree swallow is the only one that likes to go into a cavity.
Oh.
And so we can build a nest box and they'll use it. And so then we can see how the population is. Is it stable? Is it increasing, decreasing?
Oh, okay. And so somebody's keeping track of all that, I guess.
Right. We have a state database, and we also add our data from Juno to the Cornell NestWatch database.
Wow. That's amazing how much work is being done.
Yeah. So even though we don't always have all of our boxes are successful, we almost always have 300 eggs and for anywhere from 250 to 275 that live to fledge. So it's great information for us to be able to share with the folks back east.
Yeah, for sure. And hopefully they'll be able to figure out what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be really nice. So for the bird walks that are happening now through the end of June, how do people get involved? I think what's great is the directions and everything where to meet up are on the website.
Right.
Is that the best thing for people to do is do that? And then they just show up? Do you have to register or anything?
No, not well, for the last one, for Seal Trust, yes, you do have to sign up.
Okay.
Because of that's one of the things they prefer to do. But most of the time we only have like 20 people or so. We have two guides and professional folks. We have a bunch of binoculars that we could share with beginners or people that don't have a really good pair just to see if they want to try a different kind of style. So we loan those out on each trip and we take a walk and find out what much more about birds and why they live where they do and why they stop here every year because we have such good food for them on the way north.
And what's your favorite bird this time of year?
Oh my gosh.
I know it's hard to narrow down.
But. I know, but there's a couple that just have such a beautiful song. The ruby-crowned kinglet sounds like he's going to take over the kingdom of the world. Really, really loud and rash. But I also like the warbler songs. They're quite, they're very tuneful.
Oh, nice. That's really good.
But the Bonaparte sounds kind of like, ah.
Well, if you're interested, you can find out more at JunoAudubon.org. All these events are free. You can become a member of Juno Audubon. You can find out information about that on the website as well. But for these specific walks that are coming up that are every Saturday through June 15th, they start at 8 a.m. and they're all different locations, as we just talked about. For a wrap-up of that, you can go to JunoAudubon.org/events. Or if you just go to the main page, you hit the Getting Involved tab, and then there's the Events tab that's underneath that. So, but the easiest thing to do is go to JunoAudubon.org/events and the whole calendar is there, not only for these bird walks, but anything that you'll be doing throughout the rest of the year will be up on there. And Brenda, as always, it's a pleasure to have you come in and tell us a little bit about this. And hopefully as the weather's getting nice, it'd be some nice walks out there. So that's really good.
Yep. I sure hope so. Thank you so much for letting us come.
Gunath Cheesh. Up next, the Juneau Police Department recently promoted a few folks to the rank of commander. We'll meet one of them next, plus info on the JPD's new wellness and peer support program. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. But first, let's continue and have a little bird note.
This is Bird Noir. I'm Private Eye Michael Stein. When you're a bird detective, things aren't always what they seem. Take this call I got the other day from an up-and-coming gumshoe named Ollie.
A gray catbird, you say?
He thought he'd heard his first gray catbird, a species that yowls like a cat.
But I didn't get a good look, so I'm not totally sure. I think the catbird was laying low in a shrub at the edge of a field.
Didn't get eyeballs on the bird, huh? That's all right. But are you sure this wasn't a real cat meowing from a bush?
This ain't no cat. Otherwise, he'd have tried to steal my tuna sandwich.
Well, my only suggestion is to hang tough and be patient. There's another bird that sounds a little like a cat, comes out around sunset. Maybe check back around that time.
Holy prairie chickens, Michael. I'm glad I went back. I just saw a short-eared owl swoop by and make the cat noise I heard earlier.
Waiting things out and gathering all the clues helped Ollie crack this case. For more bird mysteries, go to our website, birdnotes.org. I'm Michael Stein, Private Eye.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Idi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Time for our monthly check-in with the Juno Police Department, and joining me now is newly appointed Commander Nick Garza, as well as Commander Jeremy Wesky, although Jeremy was already a commander. So, good at the cheese shot. Yay, Adi. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both in the studio today. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
Good. Thank you for having us. Appreciate
it. Going great.
Awesome. Well, first of all, congratulations to you, Commander Garza. Tell us about what your role used to be and what your role is now.
Well, my role used to be, I was a patrol sergeant, one of the four patrol sergeants for the Juneau Police Department, just supervising a patrol team, working the road, your typical what you would think a police officer does. That was my prior role. So now I've been appointed or promoted to the commander position, more of an administrative position, working in the office, driving a desk. So switched my patrol car for a desk.
Which I know in the movies that's always seen as like a demotion in some way, but this isn't really that. This is more of like moving into a different role. You're sort of supervising a little bit more.
Yeah, it's definitely a change of pace.
Yeah.
It's definitely a change of pace. So.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is all those people who had been stopped by you don't have to look out for Nick Garza on the street anymore.
Not any longer. Unless they're walking down the hallway, I might bump into him, but yeah.
Right. I love that. So now what is it? When it says you're taking over the patrol squad, is that right? So you're like leading, you're like organizing the patrol squad?
Yeah. So my new position is as a patrol commander for the Juneau Police Department. So I've gone from just supervising a single patrol team of 4 to 5 officers to supervising all 4 of those patrol teams as a patrol commander. So,
I see. Yeah. OK, I gotcha. And I know I ask Deputy Chief Campbell this all the time when he comes in, but we're still looking for police officers, right?
Most definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's always joinjpd.com. You can find out more. It's a really slick website. I think they're still offering the incentives, all that kind of stuff. And I'm not expecting you all to have the numbers, but we've been still around a dozen or so police officers that we were down. I can't remember the last time when Craig was in here, but
14, 15 officers
down, somewhere
I think
down
is,
there.
Is our current number. So, yeah.
So
definitely looking.
And it's always interesting because we talk about, you know, when the police officers live in the community that they work in, which is unusual because a lot of places down in the States, the police officer might live in a different county or, you know, and go into a community. But here, what our Juneau Police Department is part of our community. You all live here. This is where you grow your families and all that kind of stuff. So you're really a piece of what we do here. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really great. I'm happy for you and I hope you're happy.
I'm absolutely happy. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good. Absolutely. And Commander Wesky, So you were telling me you're here today to talk a little bit about the Wellness and Peer Support Program, which is so new. I couldn't find any details on it. So tell us a little bit about what this Wellness and Peer Support Program, what's it all about?
Yeah, sure. Happy to. It's actually, you know, it's been in the works for a couple of years now. It's not the fastest process in the world to build a program like that, but I'm really excited where we've gotten to. I think it's one of the things that really differentiates us when you look at other police departments in the state and in the country. If I can put a plug in for recruitment, I would put that plug in. Like, we really are taking care of our employees. And that's not just our patrol officers. That's everybody that works in the police department has access to this program. The program is kind of multi-phased. You have one section that's counseling. So we've contracted with a qualified mental health counselor to do free sessions. Every employee and their family has 10 free sessions that they can use throughout a year. We do annual wellness checks with another company that we've contracted with. So officers just once a year spend an hour talking to somebody, getting education on wellness, you know, healthy sleep habits, nutrition, those types of things. They can talk about issues they're having them, but they can also just sit there and listen and learn. We do our own in-house training yearly. We have new employee training that we have instituted. So every new employee, regardless of where they start, gets some resiliency training. And then the newest addition to the program is our peer support team. So we now have a 15-member peer support team. And then we have a counselor on staff as well. And that team, again, is comprised of members from all over the department. And they are there to help employees, whether they're having just a rough day or needing some advice, or whether we have a critical incident and we get called out and we're really focusing on one single issue. But it's a great resource for people. The program itself has been extremely popular, more popular than I think I expect it to be. A lot of folks are using it, loving it, and I'm super excited to see where it goes in the future.
That's awesome. It's great. I think a lot of organizations, businesses, everything are coming to having more of these types of programs for employees. Just having the work-life balance and mental and physical and spiritual health is a big thing, and being able to have access to those programs at work, especially with what can be a very high stress job, is so valuable. You know, I think that's pretty amazing. Commander Wesky, what is your role at the department? Is this the thing you oversee, or is there other stuff that you do as well?
This is just one thing that I oversee. I was in Commander Garza's role up until last week. So I was the patrol commander, and now I am the administrative commander. So I deal with trainings in the department. I supervise our community service officers, our school resource officers, airport, a couple other things. And then, you know, I'm in charge of a lot of our yearly reports and
I see. Yeah,
that kind of administrative stuff. Nick thinks he rides a desk. I ride a desk.
You guys can battle it out.
All right.
And I love the school resource officers, too. We've talked about those on the show before. It's such a great community program to let young people learn a little bit about the police officers and what they do. And the other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that because you pointed it out, is that the open positions at the JPD aren't just for officers. There's all kinds of positions that are available, and they list everything at that joinjpd.com. And of course, you can find out more about everything else that the police department does. You can see the daily rundown of all the things that have happened in the community. If you heard about something, you can go on and file a report. All kinds of stuff you can do at juno.org/police. That is where you go for the main thing. Obviously, if there's an emergency, you call 911. But for other things that you can find out about the entire police department, you can go over there to juno.org/police. It's really wonderful to have you both here. Thank you so much for coming in for a few minutes and telling us about that program. And also, congratulations to you, Commander Garza.
Thank you.
And you know, it's you got to get his job. You took his job once. I really appreciate you both coming in. Gun and the Cheese for being here today.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Up next, we'll chat with the Juneau Chamber of Commerce and find out a bit more about what makes them tick. This is Judo Afternoon on KTOO. But first, a savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. potlucks. You either love them or you hate them. Third option, a little of both. On one hand, there is the fun of sampling so many dishes otherwise never encountered. Like that grape salad your friend Elizabeth brought to the carnitas party. Whole red grapes and pecan bits tossed with a sweet and creamy vanilla-scented melange of dairy products. Everyone wanted that recipe. On the other hand, you have to make at least one of those potluck dishes. If you don't have that one dish, you're about to. It's a hands-down potluck pleaser and will take you about 20 minutes. Add another 5 minutes to get your shoes on, another 3 minutes to text something witty to your host about how you're late but on the way, and you'll be in the car in under half an hour. For your convenience, the following recipe serves a potluck-sized crowd, 24 people. Open 2 cans of coconut milk and put a large pot on the stove. Let's cut to the chase, since you're behind schedule. We're making coconut rice, and it calls for just 6 ingredients, starting with the 4.5 cups of jasmine rice you're adding to that pot, along with 1 tablespoon vegetable oil, 5 teaspoons brown sugar, and 2.25 teaspoons salt. Saute over medium-low heat until the sugar and salt are evenly distributed and the rice is glossy. About 3 minutes. Meanwhile, empty those 2 cans of coconut milk into a medium bowl and whisk in 4.5 cups of hot water. Pour this mixture into your pot, add a lid, and turn the burner to low. Cook for 15 minutes, then transfer to the back seat of your car.
Has anyone seen the car keys?
Find the full recipe for Potluck Pleaser Coconut Rice at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
Listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO, 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Ok Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Juno Chamber of Commerce has 275 members, and as a service organization, they work to promote economic diversity and sustainability of a vibrant Juno. And joining me now is Executive Director Maggie McMillan. Thank you so much for coming in today. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasaiti, how's it going today, Maggie?
It's going great, Boston. Thanks for having me again.
Of course. We're getting to know the chamber over the coming months, which is a really good thing because I think people, you know, don't know necessarily what it is that you hear of, like Chamber of Commerce, Better Business Bureau, you know, Rotary Club. You go, what are those things? I have no idea what those are. And so the Chamber is a wonderful organization that helps businesses and it helps promote the economic vitality, vibrancy of our little town here in Juneau, which is really great. So, So what is the vision for the Chamber of Commerce?
It's just to promote a strong economic future for our chamber, right? So we want to work together with business members and community members and listen to the needs and wants of the community and help work towards those goals.
I see. And what's the future look like for it? Did you guys do it? Are there studies that happen or is there?
So Juno Economic Development Council would be who does that, right? Okay. So let's talk about our different hats, right? Yeah. So there's the chamber and then there's Juno Economic Development Council, which is also it's funded with city funds, and then the Downtown Business Association, which is also funded by city funds. The chamber is unique because we are funded by our members. So think of us as a grassroots organization, right? Because that's what we are. And we're also over 120 years old in this community. So our chamber, I think, is pretty special. Depending on where you're from originally, your Chamber of Commerce may have done a million different things because there's no two chambers that are exactly alike. A lot of small town chambers do parades and pageants and throw parties. And though I wish our chamber did that more sometimes, we are pretty much an advocacy organization that also tends to throw a couple of parties a year. But our main focus pretty much is we advocate for the business community. So we focus on things like the city's budget or how we help get an icebreaker to town or how we get a fifth dock. We pay attention to where your sales tax are going. We make sure property taxes aren't going too high. So we are truly an advocacy organization looking out for the business community. But in turn, the work that we do, we think impacts the whole community in a positive way.
I see. Okay. And do the sort of the priorities that you set for the organization, do they come from sort of what the members are asking for? They're like, hey, we need to look into XYZ.
So it's a little bit of both. So membership always should, if there's something that they're concerned about, they should come talk to us. Even if you're not a chamber member, if you think there's something the chamber can help you with, you should come talk to us. Our priorities, though, are set at a board retreat that happens in the fall. And our board is made up of 15 board members. Right now we have 14, but it can be made up of 15 board members. And they sit around for 8 hours and we discuss what is important. You know, we talk about what last year's priorities are. Are those still things we need to work towards? So we also do put in our newsletter and ask for our members to let us know what they want us to be prioritizing.
Yeah. And who can, I think we talked about this once before, but who can become a member?
Anybody. Anybody can be a member of the chamber. Well, businesses, of course, generally small businesses up to major corporations. We have individual memberships that are really low cost and then the bigger memberships, but it is a cost, right? There is a cost to join the Chamber of Commerce, but you are investing in us. It's literally what keeps our doors open and our lights on.
So. Yeah. Well, you shared with me a couple of pages of 2024 priorities. And of course, we don't have time to go through all of them in one sitting. But is there something that you can give me as an overall? I mean, I know I see tourism on the list here because it is tourist season. Uh-huh. Is there things that are facing you right now that you're sort of focused on?
So, yes, the tourism is important to Juneau's economy, right? It's a small season, but it brings in a lot of money to Juneau. So we do focus a lot. We've been working with the cruise lines to help with the city to work on getting a passenger cap in the future, which is something that the town would really like to see. So we have enjoyable tourism season. I love coming downtown this time of year, but I know not everyone feels that way. So we're listening to the community and so are the cruise lines. And I wish more people would know that. But the chamber's been working at that for a couple months now. We also have an organization called Protect Juneau's Future, which educates people on the importance of the cruise industry and the money that it brings into our community. And I understand that money is not everything, but something has to keep your libraries open and your pools filled and all those things. So we're trying to educate the community about why everyone benefits from tourism, not just the people who own stores on Franklin.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And then there are things that I always want to mention this, but there's meetings that you have, obviously. There's people that can go to, I know that people speak at these meetings a lot.
Yeah.
Is that part of membership or can anybody go to a Chamber of Commerce luncheon?
Everyone's welcome at a Chamber of Commerce lunch. So members get a discount on the lunch. So it's $25 for a member to go or $30 for a non-member or $12 or $15 if you just want coffee and to watch the program. The programs vary every week. Well, we do them every other week now. Last week we had CORE, and then not this week, but next week we have Michelle Hale talking about a program called Words Matter, and it's about public discourse and civility and how what we say really affects the other person that might be hearing. So I'm pretty interested in having that one. We also have like the new chief of police is on our roster, gold belts on the roster. So we have a bunch of good programs coming up.
So it's a thing where you can learn a little bit about what's going on from people who are presenting that aren't necessarily members of the chamber, though some of them may be, but it's a good place to sort of engage and also meet people, maybe especially like I would feel like for a solo entrepreneur, somebody who's maybe starting a business, you know, might be a good thing to get out and be involved because you want to be inspired, but you also want to like meet people and talk about the various things that might be affecting you. Nobody is alone.
No. And right? We have a board that's made up of presidents of companies and people. We have assembly people. The mayor comes to our lunch. I mean, you could sit across and talk to these people like they're people. You don't have to feel like you're meeting them in chambers. You can just say, hi, I'm Maggie, and this is what I'm concerned about.
Right.
So it's a really cool thing because not everyone has the opportunity to pick up the phone and call the people who sit at our lunch tables, but it's a good, they could talk to them. They could come and they could sit and meet new people. And we see a lot of networking that happens in the parking lot after our lunch.
That is probably the best. That's one of those things where, yeah, you got to see where the group is and how do I get in on that group conversation over there? What's the best place to sort of follow the chamber?
JunoChamber.com. So we just redid our website 2 years ago and it's beautiful and really easy to navigate now. So JunoChamber.com is the best place to find our information. We do send out a newsletter twice a week and anyone can sign up for that. You don't have to be a chamber member. All you have to do is go to JunoChamber.com and scroll to the very bottom of the page and put your information in and then you'll get our weekly updates.
That's awesome. Okay. Is there anything else coming up that we want people to know about? Any particular event that's coming? I know there's something happening later this summer.
You know, no, we have golf coming up in August. So August 3rd, we're having our 11th golf tournament here in Juneau. I don't know if you've ever played golf in Juneau.
I have not played in Juneau.
So when I went out to that golf course the first time, I thought it was interesting, but it's the best views I've ever seen on a golf course, to be honest with you. And it's so much fun. So that's not until August 3rd, but it's one of our fun fundraising events. And it's another networking event because in the lower 48, a lot of networking happens on golf courses.
You know it. And are the lunches continuous throughout the summer too? So people, yeah. Okay. So you can just be involved all year long, year round for the lunches. Well, that's great. There's so much happening that we have to have you continue to come back and talk about more things because I think it's great.
That's everyone says, when's your busy season? And I said, I have a busy season from legislative season to tourism season to our big fundraising season. And then it starts all over again.
Yep. I love it. Maggie McMillan, Executive Director of the Juneau Chamber. And of course, you can find out more at JunoChamber.com. Do you guys have Facebook and all that too?
We do. We're also on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay.
Oh, and we're also getting a TikTok.
You're getting a TikTok.
That's what happens when you have a 23-year-old assistant.
The Juneau Chamber, getting into the 21st century. I love it. Thank you so much, Maggie. Good to cheese for being here today.
Thank you, Boston.
Up next, has your trash been rummaged or your garden pummeled by your friendly neighborhood bear contingent? We'll find out about one opportunity to help with that, the Electric Fence Reimbursement Program from Defenders of Wildlife. That's next here on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. But first, a little Sounds Wild.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
I'm taking a shortcut across the docks in the harbor on a late winter morning, and I hear the rattling call of a kingfisher. She swoops down and plunges headfirst into the water, emerging with a wiggling fish in her beak. She flies to a perch and works to get the fish positioned so she can swallow it headfirst. A lot of birds eat fish. Some, like herons, stalk the shallows on long legs and snatch up their prey. Others plunge into the water. These birds all swallow fish headfirst, so the sharp bony spines of the fins fold down against the fish's body and don't jab the throat of the predator. The fish's slimy coating makes swallowing easier. An osprey carries the fish to a perch and rips it apart to eat it, but it does position the fish carefully in its talons when it's flying, so the fish is headfirst and more aerodynamic. A kingfisher plunges headfirst and grabs the fish with its beak. The osprey plunges feet first and uses its talons. Osprey and kingfishers can completely submerge. Eagles tend to skim the surface and grab a fish. And sometimes if they've grabbed a heavy fish that they don't want to lose, they'll swim to shore. It's a myth that their talons lock. They don't lock. The eagle just doesn't want to let go. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
Support from Sunny Slope Organic Farm, providing anything garden-related for 6 years. Located 5 driveways past Eagle Crest Road. Open 10 to 3, Saturdays, and by appointment. 907-723-6353.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Have you gone early one morning to take your trash to the curb and found it's been pillaged or worse, spread around the neighborhood? On the line with me now is Isabel Grant from Defenders of Wildlife. The organization does much to prevent extinction, protect habitats, and defend nature. But one of their programs is the Electric Fence Incentive Program, and it just might be able to help you out. And you can find out more about it at defenders.org/got-bears, which is a website I love. Isabel, I love the got bears play on that words. But Gunath Chish Hai Gudi, thank you so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
Going great. Thank you for having me on to talk about one of my favorite things.
Bears.
Yes.
And really, so I guess I want to just ask this straight away. What is the Electric Fence Incentive Program?
Great first question. So this is our reimbursement program for all residents and property owners in Southeast Alaska and on the Kenai Peninsula. And how it works is people can reach us through our email or they can call our phone number, and we'll put them on our reimbursement list. We'll get them set up to build an electric fence around whatever kind of bear attracted that they have. And then from that point, we will reimburse them for 50% of the total cost of that installation. We do have a maximum reimbursement amount of $500. So if you go over $1,000, we'll still reimburse you, but it'll just be a flat rate of $500.
I see. It's a great program to be able to help get some of that cost paid for, at least half of it, right? Which is nice, because I know here in Juneau, anyway, that is a big thing. Like the bears definitely love the trash. I mean, and the city does their best with the trash cans that sort of lock and stuff like that, but somehow they're still able to get in there and make things happen. Or I guess people also worry about their gardens, or they worry about other parts of their yard. I'm curious. Is this safe?
Yeah, so electric fencing is considered safe, especially the kind that we have now, the energizers they have these days. They're not like the old energizers that produce kind of a constant stream of electricity. So you're not worried about wires getting really hot and causing spontaneous fires. So fire risk is not really associated with modern electric fences. Also, danger to people or to pets is not something that we associate with modern electric fences, because they're pulsing that electrical signal. They are considered much less dangerous than the previous electric fences, and they are considered by and large safe to use.
Yeah, because I remember the ones when I was a kid, and you definitely didn't want to touch those. Because that's what I'm wondering, like people with children or animals that might run around the yard as well. Is there like some complicated stuff in the background that's making that work, so it knows that it's a different kind of giant animal as opposed to like a 3-year-old kid?
So the experience of receiving the shock will be the same. So it's producing, 6,000 volts pushed along the wire by what we require is a 0.7 output joule energizer. And so your experience as a person touching that fence, it's going to hurt. It's also going to hurt if it's a bear. And that's part of why it's effective, is it does have that pain stimulus, which reinforces the idea that this is not a place that a bear wants to be. But it's not going to have the kind of like physiological effect, I think, that older previous electric fences were having. And, I've heard stories from people who have grown up on farms who have said, oh, I've touched an electric fence as a kid. It's something you only do once. And they were fine. Someone that I work with has told a story of like a little kind of like wiener dog touching an electric fence and yelping and then running away, and they were ultimately fine. Anytime you're dealing with electricity, you should always be following best practices, wearing rubber boots, just being generally careful. But this is not a technology that we really associate with high risk to a person.
I think it's sort of like, especially with your young children, it's sort of like the stove, right? Where you learn like, okay, the burner is hot, don't touch the burner, right? So like this area, exactly. We're protecting the trash, don't touch the trash, Johnny, like don't go into the, that fence is no good for you. Like you said, sometimes it only takes one time to realize, okay, maybe I won't do that. All right. So this program, how does it work? What do I need to do to like get involved in this?
Yeah, so the first step is to contact us so we can get you on our wait list. We are a first come, first serve program. So the term wait list can be a little bit misleading. You don't necessarily have to wait in a line to be reimbursed. Once you're ready, we can reimburse you. And so you can get a hold of us with our number 907-276-9453 or our email alaskadefenders@defenders.org.
That's a great email address.
Yes.
All right. So 276-9453 or alaskadefenders@defenders.org. Now the forms people can see on the website too. Like they can see, is it complicated or is there a lot of information that I have to provide for that?
It's pretty easy. So we have our incentive form that's on our website, on our program brochure, and that will also have the email that people can use to contact us and the phone number. And so that incentive form, we ask people to turn that into us at the end after they've built their fence. They'll calculate up their total, they'll put their total on that, their contact info, the address of their fence location. And they'll give that back to us along with the W-9, which we will provide when someone contacts us. And then copies of their receipts and 3 to 5 photos of the fence, just so we can verify that you did build it. And also that kind of helps us get an idea of, did you build it correctly? You know, if there are any potential issues that we see with it, we can let you know so that you are able to correct that. And so that you have an effective and working fence that you can rely on.
Got it. And is there, do you offer recommendations on the best ways to get a fence installed or to build this fence?
We do. So we'll recommend parts and we can help you determine, you know, where you can find those, if it's going to be local, if you have to order it, you know, where do you want to be ordering from? We know brands that make really solid energizers in particular, but most of the electric fence parts you can actually just get from your local hardware store. So, you know, metal step-in T-posts, 12 to 14 gauge wire, grounding rods, those are typically things that you can find in your town. Sometimes the energizers presents a little bit more of a problem, but we have a list of really reputable manufacturers that ship to Alaska.
That's awesome. And how long is this program going to continue?
For the foreseeable future, we have funding through this year and we expect to continue to have funding next year. So it's something that we don't really foresee going away anytime soon, which we're really excited about because we would love to continue spreading the word and get even more participation than we have.
I love that. Isabel, thank you so much. Defenders of Wildlife Electric Fence Incentive Program. Find out more by calling 276-9453, emailing alaskadefenders@defenders.org or going to the website defenders.org/gotbears. Good to the Chiefs for joining me today. Isabel, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And that will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a wonderful Wednesday. Tomorrow, Culture Rich Conversations continues their series on banned books by Black authors with a look at Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid. Programming note, Juno Afternoon will be on break from May 28th through June 11th. We return with our summer schedule on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday on June 12th. Find more about the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks and have a glorious Juno evening.